All right, Chelsea, I'm going to hand it right on over to you.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. A little introduction. I am Chelsea White. I am an outreach specialist for the Seeing Eye. So I do a lot of stuff like this, both virtual now, over the last couple of years, and in person. So I a lot of conferences and conventions and visiting agencies and anywhere there might be blind or visually impaired people or professionals in the field of visual impairment. So TVIs, O&Ms, those kinds of people. And my job is twofold. It's education. So education about dog guides, what they do, what they don't do, how their work, all the qualifications a person would need to, you know, be eligible for a dog, all of that kind of stuff. And then also to educate, recruit folks to the Seeing Eye specifically and share information about kind of our program and what we do and how we operate and all that kind of stuff. So a little general information about the Seeing Eye. And then I'll get into an update because right now I know a lot of people are kind of wondering, you know, where all the different schools are at as far as class sizes and all that such business. So, and wait lists and all that. So, but a little bit of information about us. We are located in Morristown, New Jersey. So all the way across the country from California. We do the whole process of training dogs as guides and then matching those dogs and training those dogs with people who are blind or visually impaired. So we do the whole process. We breed all of our own dogs. We have a puppy raising program. So a program to get dogs ready to go into for their formal training to become a guide dog. And then we do the training of the dog to become a seeing eye dog. And then we match that dog to a blind or visually impaired person. That person comes to New Jersey and trains with the dog. And then we provide support to that individual for the working relationship of person and dog. So we do the whole process from start to finish.
You're the school, right?
Pardon?
You're the oldest school.
We are the oldest school in this country.
Right.
Yeah. And actually at this point in time, we are the oldest existing school in the world. There were two schools in Germany that had got started before the Seeing Eye, but both of those schools are no longer in existence. So a fun fact, the second oldest guide dog school in the world is Guide Dogs of Italy. They are 3 months younger than we are. So,
wow.
So there you go. There's your fun fact for the day. So like, so we do the whole process. We breed, raise and train German Shepherds, Labrador Retrievers, Golden Retrievers, and then we also cross the lab with the Golden. Training. So people, you know, a lot of one of the questions I get quite often is, you know, how long do I have to, you know, come to campus and all that kind of stuff. For a first time handler, so for somebody who's never had a dog before, their training is 3.5 weeks. For somebody who has had a dog from us before, it is a week shorter. It's 2.5 weeks. And then we also, for folks who have had dogs from us before, we also offer what we call a home and away program. So somebody would come be there for about a week, week and a half-ish, and then go back home and finish training at home. And we do offer home placement. So we would actually bring the dog to you and work with you and do the training and stuff in your home environment. Those two programs we really only offer for folks who have had dogs before. So first time handlers, we require that somebody come to campus. So, So that is very briefly about us. I can get into more details if anybody is interested, but a quick update. We all know that, you know, COVID has turned everything upside down and inside out and backwards. We just this class, so the class that started Monday of this week, we are back to full capacity. So we are in non-COVID times, we are 4-to-1 ratio. So 4 students to every 1 instructor. Classes can be as large as 24 students if we have a full, full 6 instructors in a group and all that kind of stuff. Quite often classes tend to be a little bit smaller than that. They tend to be more in the 18 to 20-ish range, again, with that 4-to-1 ratio. Like I said, back full up 4-to-1. Masks and all of that kind of stuff are optional at this point. So if people are, feel more comfortable wearing a mask, that's absolutely your choice. But we're not requiring it. Back to social distancing. If we, it's kind of one of those things where, if you're a little more comfortable with that, we'll absolutely do what we can to, make you as comfortable as possible. But again, we're not enforcing it strictly at this point. We are, however, prioritizing people who are vaccinated. It's not a requirement, but we're prioritizing people right now who are vaccinated, because currently our wait list, we have about 250 people on our wait list right now, and that's about the amount of people that we serve in a given year. So we're looking at, about a year's worth of people on a waiting list. Now that we're back up to full capacity, we hope to be caught up as long as everything, knock on wood, as long as everything stays, cases stay low and all that kind of stuff. We hope to be caught up by the end of this year for sure. We hope. Because we've also kind of ramped up our home placements and all that kind of stuff as well, just so we can get people served. So that is pretty much a very quick overview of who we are and a quick overview of kind of what's been going on lately. And I'd be more than happy to answer questions, because I could talk forever about nothing and not answer people's questions. So
what, you still say fooey?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
That question was brought to mind because you mentioned the German school that's before you, and I think you sort of came from that school, and they say fooey, P-F-U-I, right?
Yes.
Correcting a dog, and that became fooey and seeing eye, and I don't know if any other schools still use it to correct a dog.
Fidelco might, but I don't quote me on that. I don't know that for sure. So, but you are
oriented, yeah. So I have to do that.
Yeah, you are correct. It came from our sort of German roots. And fleet is one of those words that, you can say it with a lot of emphasis, fleet. But you don't have to be like obvious about it. You can be very quiet. The whole world doesn't need to know. But you can put a lot of intent behind it, and dogs will, really respond to that. They're like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. So, any other questions, comments?
This is Christine Bailey. I have some questions.
Yeah.
One is, who will be paying the vet bills for the dog?
So, yeah, no, fair question. So we give ownership of the dog to you. So if you came to us and got a dog, and once you complete training and are walking out that door to head to the airport to go home, that dog is legally and literally your property. We maintain no level of ownership to the dog whatsoever. So in the little contract that you sign, there's nothing that says you own the dog except, right? There's no except, there's no but. It's complete ownership. And because of that, you're taking on responsibility, the dog is yours. So the care and upkeep of the dog is also your responsibility. Now, we also understand that, vet care is expensive, and it's not getting any cheaper. And so we're also not going to just toss you out to the wolves either. If something comes up that's very unexpected, and treating, doing surgery, whatever, would keep the dog working, then, we will work with you. We, like I said, we're not going to just toss you out there and say, oh, gee, good luck, have fun, have a nice day. But as a rule, that expense, vet care and all that kind of stuff is your responsibility. And did you say you had another question?
Oh, the other one was boarding, but then you answered that question too, if you're sick and about boarding. So that's on you too. So that answered that question. Thank you.
We will board dogs. If you have, you're going to have a major surgery, hip replacement, major knee surgery, something that's going to keep you, kind of off your feet and all that kind of stuff for a while. We will definitely board dogs. Now it would be your responsibility, to get the dog to us, but then once the dog is with us, then, we don't charge to take the dog or, to take care of the dog or anything like that. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. So.
Chelsea, it's Sarah. One of the questions that I've heard asked many times from guide dog schools is, are there any age limitations either, on either end, young or old?
Yes. Yeah. I thought of another thing to a couple of things to cover. So as far as age goes, the youngest, 16, there's been a handful of people that have been maybe 15-ish, but on average 16, and then upper age limit, we really don't have one, as long as somebody is, still relatively active, don't have to climb mountains or run marathons or anything like that, but as long as you're kind of getting out there, going and doing fairly regularly, then we really don't have an upper age limit. I was in class, I think with my I forgot to mention earlier, I'm also a graduate, I'm a guide dog user, had dogs now for, oh gosh, over 30 years. I think it was my third dog I was in class with, getting, and there was a gentleman there who, I think he was 77, 76, 77, 78, somewhere around in that general vicinity. And he was getting his first dog. And I'm here to tell you, if I can be that active at 75 plus as he was, I'll be doing really good.
Our immediate past president is a graduate of your school, and I don't know how old Judy is, but she's in her mid-70s, and I think she got her latest dog, Sarah, was it last year?
Actually, no, it was just last month.
Okay, yeah, Judy Wilkinson is our immediate past president, and she's, I don't want to say how old she is, because I don't know exactly, but she's over 70.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This person was actually getting their first dog.
Okay, she wasn't getting her first, but even so, yeah. I mean, at her age, you know.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, no real upper age limit. Another question that I get quite often is remaining vision. How much is too much? Is there a such thing? And there is a such thing as too much vision. Although that level of vision, for the longest time, for years and years and years and years, the sort of prevailing thought was that you had to be either totally blind or awfully darn close to it before you could benefit from a guide dog. And that's just not the case. There's so many people out there that have remaining vision that can absolutely benefit from having a dog. And what we typically say, we don't really have a number, that says, oh, you have to be, 2,400 or whatever, because we all know that you can have two people who on paper have the exact same, visual acuity and field and all that kind of stuff. But the way people use that vision can be completely different. So what we typically tell people, or what I typically tell people, is if you are a cane user or should be, most of the time for safety, then a dog is definitely a possibility. Now, if you are a person who, most of the time, vision is good enough that, you can pretty much do the things you need to do and you're pretty safe about it without a cane, then a dog honestly is probably just going to slow you down. On occasion, maybe at night you have a little bit of trouble and maybe you pull out the cane, but for the most part you can, find those stairs and you're not bumping into things and all that kind of stuff and get around without a cane, mostly just carry it for identification, then a dog probably honestly really is just going to slow you down. But if somebody is a cane user, or really honestly should be, for safety, you're tripping over curbs and bumping shoulders into things and you found one too many flights of stairs the hard way and things like that, then a dog is definitely a possibility. So, that kind of addresses that issue. I get that question quite a bit as well, as far as vision and what's too much, what's not, that kind of thing. So, any other questions, anybody, or anything else I should cover for folks that might be listening to this later?
What are some highlights of training?
Oh gosh, well, dog day is always a highlight. So the day you actually get your dog. So the way we do it is everybody arrives on the same day, whether you're a new person or you've had 10 dogs, everybody arrives on the same day. So it's a Monday, and Monday is spent getting acquainted to a learning campus or reacquainted to campus, doing a couple of Juno walks, which is where the instructor plays the part of the dog, and that's they're looking at matching and the best possible dog for you. Tuesday, again, is more Juno walks in town, you know, crossing streets, that kind of stuff. Again, looking at making sure that, you know, the dog or dogs that they're looking at for you, you know, which one they're finally going to choose. Monday morning, breakfast, and then after breakfast, or sorry, Wednesday, after breakfast is when dogs are, you get your dog. So dog day is definitely a highlight, because up until you actually get your dog, you generally don't know much about him or her. Although your instructors tend to like to give hints to confuse people, because it's just funny. I don't know, they're crazy like that. So dog day is always is always a highlight. That first walk with your dog is always, at least for me anyway, is always a highlight. Especially that very first walk with that very first dog. But that very first walk, even with dog 2 and 3 and 4, has always been a highlight. The trip to New York City is also a huge highlight. I personally, there is nothing like going into the city and walking through Times Square, which if anybody has been to Times Square, it's crazy. There's people everywhere and sights and smells and sounds. And I mean, it's just, it's a crazy place. And to walk around Times Square and up and down those streets and not run into a single person is amazing. And, you know, to come to street corners and have your dog stop and to work their way through the crowds that gather at street corners to cross streets and to get across those crazy busy streets safely is pretty darn cool. So those would probably be what I would consider highlights. Also the day you finish. So class is broken up into kind of two parts. The first part of class, you're working on basically prescribed routes in Morristown. That there's three of them. And they start out very simple, in a pretty quiet neighborhood with, you know, very simple street crossings, pretty straightforward blocks, all the way up to the last sort of route that everybody does. It's longer. It's through downtown Morristown, which is, especially during the week, is very busy. As far as pedestrians and traffic and all that kind of stuff, a couple of your street crossings are a little more complicated. So the day that you finish that is also a great day, because then the second half of class is what we call freelance, which is where you work on the stuff that you need to work on. So if you live in a big city, if you say live in San Francisco or LA with lots of, you know, you may take more than one trip into New York City. You might take two. If you do a lot of bus and train stuff, you know, you live in San Francisco and you take, you know, BART frequently, you're going to do lots of bus and train stuff. If you live in an area that's a little more rural, so maybe not, you know, as many sidewalks, go to an area that has fewer sidewalks and is a little more rural. So you're going to do all that stuff. And that's when you're going to go to the grocery store and have that experience and, you know, go to a place with an escalator and have that experience with your dog and all of that kind of stuff. And that's the second half of class. So, those would probably be highlights I would say of class. So. Yep.
And that was great, Chelsea, because in answering that question, you actually answered my next question was, if you don't live in a place like New York City, do you get the opportunity too? So that was perfect. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's one really, really awesome. And I think most guide dog schools are in areas like this for this very reason. We have access to everything from the craziness that is New York City all the way to going for a hike in the woods. You know, we have several areas around Morristown that not far, surprisingly enough, you know, where you can get out into the woods and you're hiking, you know, you're climbing over fallen trees and around rocks and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, you can have that experience. You can have a college campus experience, you know, while it's not going to be probably going to be your college campus that, you know, you're going to be heading to, it's still at least a college campus. And, you know, because college campuses are entities unto themselves, you know, with, you know, crazy sidewalks going in like 20 million different directions and students on bicycles and skateboards and, you know, the craziness that is a college campus. So you can have that experience. Again, like I said, neighborhoods without street crossing or without sidewalks. Areas of town, we have areas of town with street crossings where, you know, the ramp doesn't go straight. The corner has the ramp that kind of is it, if you went straight off the ramp, you'd end up in like the middle of the intersection, you'd diagonal the intersection. So instead of having a corner with, you know, two ramps, you know, one going straight and one going, you know, either left or right, you've got just the one that leads off into the diagonal of the intersection. So we have those kind of crazy street crossings that are popular in certain areas of the country. So all kinds of, we have access to all kinds of stuff that, you know, people might run into or have to deal with when they go home. So, yeah.
Awesome. Are there any other questions for Chelsea?
Chelsea, I have another question for you. On if somebody has a balance issue, which is physical, is there any physical issues that you do not handle or mental issues you do not handle with a guide dog?
So as far as physical stuff, balance, we definitely will address and deal with and handle and match a dog, you know, to kind of help with that. I've had a couple of my classes where folks in class have used support canes along with their dog. And so that's definitely not, I mean, that's definitely something that we can work with. You know, quite a few of our graduates are diabetic and you know, deal with diabetic neuropathy and those kinds of things. So, and, you know, so balance can definitely be a concern. So that's definitely something that we can work with. The one thing that we do not do is deal or train a dog for a person who is profoundly deafblind. So somebody who has vision loss and hearing loss to be eligible for our program has to be able to judge traffic fairly accurately, either with remaining vision or remaining hearing or a combination thereof. It's just not something we just don't have a program for folks who are profoundly deafblind. The ability to judge traffic definitely needs to be there. And then also, with the exception of a, I think about three or four of our graduates who, because of accidents over years, have found themselves in wheelchairs, we also don't train a dog to work with somebody who is visually impaired and in a wheelchair. Like I said, with the exception of a couple of our graduates who have had dogs from us before. So those are the two things that we don't have programs for that. So I know Guiding Eyes and Leader Dogs have programs for people who are profoundly deafblind. And as far as wheelchair stuff,
I know my understanding tells you that there's not anything anymore. That's what I've been hearing.
Southeastern, it is really unfortunate. Southeastern used to have a program, but I don't think they do anymore. So unfortunately. So
go ahead, Christine.
That's all right. I was just telling her thank you, because some people that are listening to this, they might want to know that kind of question.
Absolutely. So
exactly. And I have one more additional, cross disability question. What about somebody who has a cognitive disability, whether it be, a DD or ID, developmental or intellectual, or maybe a traumatic brain injury?
As long as somebody is able to manage and handle a dog, and be able to, take care of that dog independently, and travel independently, then absolutely. We have quite a few of our graduates are veterans, and have had traumatic brain injury, deal with PTSD, various things like that. So, as long as somebody can, pretty well, take care of the dog and is gonna, have the use for a dog, and travels, independently most of the time, then absolutely. So.
Oh, that is fantastic. Yeah. Do we have any other questions for Chelsea before we close out and move on to our dinner to come back to resolutions?
The joys of resolutions.
Absolutely. I'm the co-chair too. I love it. We canceled our pre-convention board meeting, and instead of leaving it empty, we added in another resolutions meeting. So rock on, right?
Fantastic.
You just made me write the word resolutions in my document that I meant to write whereas.
Oh, well darn. And there is ACB's resolution chair. That's fantastic. But any other questions for Chelsea? Hearing none. And Chelsea, if there's a chapter or an affiliate that would like to have you come and speak, can I just contact you directly and put you in touch with them?
Absolutely. So I just to toss it out there. So Seeing Eyes sort of contact information. So Facebook, or not Facebook, oh gosh. Website is www.seeingeye.org, and our phone number is 800-539-4425, and my email is white, like the color, letter C for Chelsea, @seeingeye.org. So thank you guys very much.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much, Chelsea. I appreciate you. And it's such a great presentation. We covered a lot of ground for sure.